An evacuation on this scale is unprecedented. We will be studying this operation for years.
They're all out and safe. Thai rescuers complete dangerous cave rescue. It's Wednesday, July 11th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, China allows Lucia to finally leave the country. Rain adds to deadly floods in Japan. New promise in the HIV/AIDS fight. Sidestepping extinction. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Rescuers in Thailand Tuesday pulled out the last members of the wild boar soccer team and their coach, who had been trapped inside a flooded cave since June 23rd. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports the rescued boys are under quarantine at a local hospital following a, quote, mission impossible operation that has been dubbed an amazing success.
Rescue operations came to a close Tuesday as crews evacuated the final members of the wild boar youth soccer team and their coach, who had been trapped in a flooded cave in Thailand since June 23rd. The Thai official who commanded the rescue operation spoke of its success.
Team Thailand, team government officials, private industry team, and the media that helped us, including the support from the whole world. We did something nobody thought possible. It's the first time in the world. It is our pride, mission possible of Team Thailand.
Most of the boys are at a nearby hospital under close medical supervision.
Upon arrival, we gave the boys tetanus and rabies shots, vitamin B1 and antibiotics through their veins, according to the treatment plan. In addition, we have found that two of the boys' X-ray results were abnormal, suspecting they might have pneumonia.
The hospitalized boys have so far been kept separate from their families, though some have seen each other through glass and spoken by phone. Medical officials will need to determine the boys' lungs are free from what is known as cave disease before releasing them from the hospital. The last remaining boys rescued Tuesday received on-site medical attention. Rescuers have been racing the clock since divers found the team on July 2nd. Monsoon rains have threatened both the stranded team of non-swimmers and rescue experts sent to save them. One seal died Friday after dropping air tanks along the cave's escape route. But today, it seems, rescue efforts were not in vain. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Thailand's health secretary told reporters that all of the team were generally healthy and in good spirits thanks to their, quote, high immunity derived from being footballers. The boys will likely be in the hospital for at least a week. Amnar Mirza is the national coordinator of the National Cave Rescue Commission. He tells VOA Sarah Williams the success of the mission required international assistance.
This could not have been done by any one country's resources. There just simply are not enough really good cave divers in any one place in the world. Even, you know, United States and Great Britain and Australia don't have the number of people required. So it did require an international effort, and the Thai government is to be commended for the fact that they welcome that international help.
Do you remember any operation of this kind of magnitude in regard to a cave rescue?
There has been none. It's been unprecedented, and I've been doing cave rescue for 30 years and studying it all that time. There was a major operation that went on in the 1920s in the United States called Floyd Collins, but even then it was a fairly minor operation in comparison.
Well, in addition to everything else, I think most of these boys, if not all of them, didn't know how to swim. So this was a very complicated undertaking.
Absolutely. Now, they were aided by the fact that they had several days to practice and drill some of the skills that they needed, so that not only helped them actually get themselves out, but it kept them occupied during the time while they were waiting. It gave them a psychological boost from the standpoint of they're doing something to help themselves, and it built trust with their rescuers. And that last point there, I think, was probably the most critical aspect, is that if they could have that absolute trust with the divers who brought them out, that I think that was the biggest factor that led to the successful outcome.
I believe several of them were in there for several days with that football team.
Yeah, they had at least three divers with them at all times. And, of course, the divers who initially found them and were bringing supplies in with them, stayed with them for quite some time. Those people are just absolutely commended, as well as, of course, the fact that the tie diver who'd perished during the operation, we're just very glad that his sacrifice was not in vain.
You know, looking forward to other potential rescues from caves, what do you think the diving community or the cave rescue community can learn from this whole thing?
Well, we, and within the cave rescue community, we had never really done any significant practice with this kind of evacuation, of evacuating a non-diver with an experienced cave diver. You know, we've played around with it a little bit, and some people have experimented with it, but an evacuation on this scale is, again, it's unprecedented. We will be studying this operation for years, and it's not just the diving portion of it. It's actually the overall logistics of the management of the whole operation, as well as the number of people and personnel and equipment that was required to perform it. Again, I the largest cave rescue operation I've been on maybe involved a couple of hundred people, and then this one involved thousands.
This team and their coach ended up going in there. They didn't think there would be the amount of rains that they got. And I guess maybe in the future when people look at caves, they always have to consider the weather or how things can change.
Well, absolutely. One of the basic safe caving rules is to know how a cave you're going into responds to rain and know what the weather is going to do. And even then, you can get caught unawares. There can be, you know, the weather forecast is not perfect. There can be other conditions that were unforeseeable that caused a cave to flood worse. But mostly, caving is a safe activity if done following the basic safe caving rules of letting somebody know where you're going and when you expect to be out, know what the weather is going to do and how the cave reacts, and having the basic equipment of helmets and lights and some supplies if you have to do wait for a little while.
Anmar Mirza, the National Coordinator of the National Cave Rescue Commission. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find currently trending on VOAnews.com. All 12 boys and coach rescued from Thai cave. Widow of Chinese dissident Liu Xiaoboa arrives in Germany. Rising temperatures bring new risk to Japanese landslide survivors. U.S. puts visa restrictions on Myanmar and Laos. South Korea to probe military plan to quell park protests. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. After 8 years of virtual house arrest, the wife of the late Nobel laureate and political dissident Liu Xiaoboa has been allowed to leave China for Germany. The foreign ministry in Beijing said Liu Xia was seeking medical treatment abroad. The announcement came as Premier Li Keqiang ended a visit to Germany on Tuesday. Liu Xia, a poet and artist whose husband died of liver cancer last year while in prison, has never been charged with a crime and reportedly suffers from depression. She was confined to her home shortly after her husband was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2010. Her case has been championed by rights organizations and Western governments. Joseph Cheng is a retired professor from Hong Kong City University, and he tells VOA's Victor Beatty China normally expels such dissidents, but appeared to have had a reason for delaying her departure.
It appears that the broad policy of the Chinese authorities is not to hold these people in China and allow these dissidents to go abroad where they cannot function properly. However, Madame Liu Xia was detained for one more year after Liu Xiaobo's death, probably because the Chinese authorities did not want her to make various comments in the international community regarding the ill treatment of Liu Xiaobo, especially in his final years in prison. So that explained the delay in sending her abroad, as well as the general policy of allowing these famous dissidents to leave China. However, as we were saying, the present policy is less generous in the sense that Liu Xia's brother has been still retained in China, meaning that there is a hostage against Madame Liu Xia to ensure that she will not speak too boldly against the Chinese authorities.
There's been no clear reason why she's been allowed to leave, except perhaps to seek medical attention. I understand she suffers from depression. Is that the reason, do you think?
Her health has been deteriorating, and her psychological and emotional state is probably alarming, especially to her friends. Obviously, Madame Liu Xia has not been charged, so the Chinese authorities have no legitimate reason to place her under house arrest and to deny her access to friends and media, domestic and international. Her treatment has well illustrated the rather illegal and inhumane treatment of dissidents in China as well as their family members.
Do you expect her to return to China?
I don't think so. I think in the first place, there is very little that she can do in China, and apparently she would like to have a good rest, at least to recover from her deteriorating health. And at the same time, one has to understand that even if she wants to go back, the Chinese authorities may not allow her to go back. And there are plenty of examples that the Chinese authorities do not allow dissidents residing overseas to go back to China.
Given her relative prominence, Joseph Cheng said he expects Liu Xia to travel and speak extensively depending on her health status. Happening now in Asia, Chinese President Xi Jinping has pledged a package of $20 billion in loans, about $106 million in financial aid, to Middle East nations as part of what he called an oil and gas plus model to revive regional economic growth. Beijing sees the Middle East as key for its Belt and Road foreign policy plan. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you along with us today on VOA Asia. Japan has begun a recovery process from floods that have killed more than 100 people, affected electricity supplies, and caused material damage. Since Thursday, the southwestern part of the country has been hit by torrential rain that has caused flooding and landslides. VOA Slotika Hoke reports the area has received three times the usual rainfall for all of July.
The rain may have stopped, but life is not back to normal in the Hiroshima area, where rescuers on Monday searched for the victims of floods and landslides. About 80 people were still missing on Monday.
We have 110 members of riot police and special rescue units of the Tokyo Metropolitan Police here, searching for the missing people.
The death toll is expected to grow as rescuers pull out bodies. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe canceled his upcoming foreign trips to deal with the emergency.
We are increasing the number of self-defense forces to 73,000 members who are doing their utmost to rescue people and assist residents.
The heavy rains began with the typhoon last week that was followed by several days of record-breaking torrential rain. Nearly 2 million people have been ordered to evacuate. Many were placed in emergency shelters.
The sound of the water was loud and scary, but the landslide smells so bad that if I opened the window, I wouldn't be able to sleep.
Those whose homes were destroyed by water and mudslides will need long-term assistance.
Our house was washed away. Our other house that wasn't washed away is by the river, and more than half of it has mud in it.
Clouds cleared on Sunday, giving way to scorching sun. There are fears of sunstroke in the areas that were left without electricity or water. Japan's worst death toll from flooding was in 1983, when 117 people died. Zlarica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up, soybeans in trouble as chickens hatch in record numbers. You're listening to VOA Asia.
You're Your requests, your dedications, and interviews and performances by your favorite music superstars. It's Border Crossings. This is Larry London. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 15 hours Universal Time on VOA or online at voanews.com. You've got control. Border Crossings, weekdays at 15 hours Universal Time at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This news from VOA Asia, Tesla Chief Executive Officer Elon Musk has landed a deal with Chinese authorities to build a new auto plant in Shanghai, its first factory outside the United States. It would double the size of the electric car maker's global manufacturing and build up to 500,000 cars a year in 2 to 3 years. Build your daily news awareness at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, concerns grow among U.S. farmers while poultry is hatching in China. These are the stories on this week's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
U.S. soy farmers are worried about their income as the trade war with China continues. The U.S. on Friday slapped tariffs on $34 billion worth of Chinese imports. China fought back with similar measures, including 25% tariff on U.S. soybeans. The U.S. relies heavily on the Chinese market for soybean sales. Last year, 31% of U.S. soybean production was exported to China. The idea of losing that market is making many farmers anxious. Soybean farmer John Kiefner.
Every day there's things to be worried about. I really don't want any more uncertainty. I can't control the weather, and apparently I can't control my government. I can't control the trade issues that they start. My worst fear is coming true with the tariff. It looks like the American soybean farmer is going to grow a great crop. And if we grow a good crop, we need good prices. And it looks like the tariff, in combination with the high supply of soybeans, is leading to really low prices.
The U.S. tariffs are part of Donald Trump's America First policy and are meant to pressure China into addressing alleged unfair trade practices, such as the theft of American intellectual property. Trump is betting his strong-arm tactics will persuade the Chinese government to come to a trade agreement. But some are mystified by the president's decision, given that many of the soybean farmers live where his political base is. U.S. soy farmers have repeatedly called on the Trump administration to come up with different solutions, especially as they see the price of related production materials going up. Farmer John Kiefner.
The price of gasoline is going up. The price of our seed is going up. The price of machinery is going up. The rest of America is coming out of a recession, and it would be really unfortunate if the farmers go into a recession.
Despite the concern and the impact on the markets, another $16 billion worth of tariffs on Chinese imports are set to hit in the next 2 weeks. Other U.S. industries that could suffer in the face of retaliatory tariffs include the auto, pork, and cotton industries. Farmers raising hens for eggs in China are shifting from backyards to large-scale automatic factory farms. At a new $22 million hatchery in Handan, about 250 miles southwest of Beijing, 200,000 chicks are hatched every day. Wang Lanzheng is the chairman of Huayu Agricultural Science and Technology Company.
The biggest advantage is firstly biosafety is quite good. Sterilization and environmental control is very good. Because hatching chicks is like women giving birth. You need a safe environment with very high standards of biosecurity in various aspects and bacteria control.
Imported latest generation equipment helps to automate and speed up the egg hatching process. An automatic grading machine at the Handan plant can handle 60,000 eggs an hour and sorts them into sizes before sending them on to incubators. Once hatched, female chicks go to automatic beak clipping machines that process around 3,500 chicks an hour. Males are sold as food for snakes. In total, only 20 staff are needed to run the new plant compared with 100 in Huayu's older hatchery. The rapidly modernizing supply chain in China's $37 billion egg industry can also be seen in other industries as China overhauls production of everything from pork to milk to vegetables. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia, BMW Group and the biggest Chinese SUV brand, Great Wall Motor, announced a partnership to produce electric mini vehicles in China as global automakers ramp up development under pressure from Beijing. The joint venture aims for annual production of 160,000 vehicles. Power your news day with a visit to VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, there's a glimmer of hope in the fight against the deadly HIV virus that causes AIDS. A new vaccine has produced a favorable immune system response during a trial on nearly 400 people. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo has details from the recent study published in the Lancet Medical Journal.
Around 37 million people are living with HIV and AIDS, with 1.8 million new infections and a million deaths each year, according to the World Health Organization. But trials for a new AIDS vaccine has shown robust immune responses in rhesus monkeys and humans. Dan Baruch is among the principal investigators of the study.
This study is now testing whether this vaccine indeed protects humans against acquisition of HIV infection.
That phase began in November in southern Africa, where 2,600 at-risk young women are being tested.
While there are many different vaccine candidates that have been tested in the laboratory and animal models and even small-scale human studies, very few have reached the point of testing of an efficacy trial.
HIV has infected around 80 million people worldwide since it was first detected in the 1980s. A safe and effective vaccine will represent a huge breakthrough.
So we're pleased with the results so far, but we're cautiously optimistic because we will not know whether this vaccine works in humans until this next study is done.
The first interim data from the Phase 2 study is expected in 2021. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
When the last male northern white rhino, named Sudan, died in March, hopes for a revival of the subspecies were crushed. But as Sadie Witkowski explains, the magnificent creatures might not go the way of the dodo.
Although there are only two northern white rhinos left alive in the world, their kind might be on the brink of a comeback with the help of science. In a recently published study in Nature Communications, the scientists used frozen sperm from three deceased northern white rhinos to artificially fertilize southern white rhino eggs outside the womb. They allowed the eggs to grow until they had reached the blastocyst stage. At this point, they froze the developing eggs to preserve until a suitable surrogate mother could be found.
So the two females sleeping down are the two northern female white rhinos left on the planet. It's a mother and a daughter, and the one facing us is the southern white rhino. The one which is awake is the southern white rhino, of which we might use as a surrogate mother.
While the two types of white rhinos may look similar, the northern and southern subspecies differ in several physical aspects. For example, the northern white rhino has hairier ears, and the larger southern white rhino has grooves between its ribs.
So we hope that within 3 years we will have been able to create the first northern white rhino baby so we can let it live with the two remaining northern white rhinoceros females in Kenya.
Thankfully, the rhinos are still genetically close enough that scientists can use southern white rhino eggs to create hybrid animals. The last two northern white rhinos are no longer fertile, so scientists could not create a pure northern white rhino embryo. In the future, researchers hope to create artificial northern white rhino eggs from saved reproductive cells to help ensure genetic diversity.
Only two infertile females are still living on our planet, but with this technology approach, we are capable to create a genetic viable population in the next decade.
With the help of southern white rhinos, the most abundant rhino in the world, perhaps scientists can preserve these massive mammals. Sadie Witkowski, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Thanks to science and technology, you can find our program in many different ways and hear us every day. You can find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download us as a podcast. And, of course, you can stream our program on VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. You can also hear us quote, the old-fashioned way, on the radio. Radioactive at Temasek Polytechnic in Singapore is one station you can hear us. We thank everyone who tuned in today. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Rob McLean, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day.